So for the first time in 5 years, Formula One returns to China, and Max Verstappen said, "Get ready to learn Dutch, buddy." Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Ha 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 ha, you thought it was going to be different. Again. Hi everybody, welcome to episode 510 of Motorsport 101. I am your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us again. And in this episode of the podcast, we are going to be talking about the 2024 Chinese Grand Prix, the first Chinese Grand Prix in Formula One for 5 years. Hey, remember back in 2019, the last time we did this, it was a Mercedes 1-2 finish with Hamilton leading Bottas and Vettel back home. The man, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Hey, oh, what a time to be alive. That was the 1,000th Formula One race, by the way. About 106 Grand Prix since then in just the last 5 years. It's a wild time indeed. So, I'm Dre Harrison as ever, and here are my co-hosts. You know him, you love him. First up, here's RJ O'Connor. How's it going, big man?
It's going great, I guess. You know, I'm so sad I'm not going to be at the Miami Grand Prix this year. I know it's a mediocre event from the outside. It represents all the excesses bad about Formula One, but like, I don't know. I like being a part of it. I was proud that I could say I was part of the first and the second, but not the third. That's a bummer. But you know what? At least this gives me more time for leisure, more time to spend in the company of my friends, more time to watch New York Knicks basketball.
You see the smile warm to Cam Buckley's face as a man who watched game two of that series. Isn't that right, Mr. Buckley?
Personally, I am concerned with one thing and one thing only, and that is the complete eradication of the Miami Heat. Root and stem. But, you know, we can look forward to Miami. We can look forward to some blue Ferraris as they have tied up with HP. And their F1 car going forward can be the first car to ever break down due to a lack of cyan.
Hey, that's great. Hewlett-Packard, let's see. Let's look into some of their subsidiaries here. EDS Israel. Hold the fort. They run all the supercomputers that run the IDF?
Oh.
That sounds great. That sounds really awesome.
And yeah, enough to fund 2/3 of their budget cap a year, according to Mr. Will Buxton. Isn't that lovely? As much as I am a sucker for the color blue. It is my favorite color. I've longed for a blue Ferrari. I'm as excited as anybody to see that car on a track. What I would also say is, be very careful where you're sending your money to in times like this. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, I mean, it looks like Ferrari shipped off their F1 strategy crew over to the WEC team for this year, given what happened over in Imola.
How do you blow a 1-2-3 like that?
You had three bullets in the chamber and you decided we're not going to split any strategy, and you let Toyota and Porsche take all your lunch money and shove you in the mud right in front of your house.
With Porsche getting both of its factory cars getting penalties, but not as big a pet. We'll get in that on a future episode.
Roger, everything okay, bud?
Depends on who you ask.
Why are you worried about Roger? You should be worried about my sanity.
Personally,
as a Porsche enjoyer in 2024, relative to everything else with Penske's ongoing situation, it's kind of like the Bugatti and the Shaq meme.
Yeah, that works. That definitely works. But we'll talk a little bit more about Roger Penske's related shenanigans in our next totally normal podcast coming up. You'll see when you get there. But in this episode, we'll talk a little bit more about China. Max Verstappen winning again. He's been virtually perfect outside of that stuck front brake where we had in Australia another ridiculously dominant weekend. But we found a weakness with him, which we'll get to very shortly. We'll talk about that. Some of the midfield action going on there again. Lance Stroll causing mayhem in the midfield, deciding to enact Rule 34 on Daniel Ricciardo at the bottom of the hairpin.
Nose down, gearbox up.
It went about as well as you'd expect. We'll talk about Zhou Guanyu and the large amount of hype he got for his home Grand Prix. My goodness. He got the Sebastian Vettel end of race plinth treatment. I'm like, ooh, damn, that's special. And we ask a very important question. Will adding two more points to adding two more places to the point system help us all out? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? We'll break that down in the next 45 minutes to an hour or so. But in the meantime, here's the places you can find us real quick. We are on Twitter. I say Twitter, I was about to say Elon Musk's failed business investment again.
They're both interchangeable.
They're both true. At Motorsport underscore 101, our personal handles are at DreHarrison101, at CBuckley917, and at RJO'Connell. You can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. If you can back us at the $5 level, you get early access to all of our content, and you can upgrade to the $10 tier to get Supporters Club access and the ability to listen to these shows live as they're being recorded. We've got plenty of folks in the audience this time around. Feel free to say hi, so we can give you a shout-out later on if you like. Feel free to do that. And if you're also on Instagram, Motorsport101Pod. But if you want some bonus thoughts on all things China and IndyCar, except for Wednesday's news, you can check that out on the website, motorsport101.com. Check the blog section if you want more from yours truly on that one. But in the meantime, we'll talk a little bit about Formula One right after this for the 2024 Chinese Grand Prix.
It must have seemed like the good times would never end. But then, China happened.
Guys, we found a Max Verstappen weakness.
What?
For the first time in years. He wasn't that good in the rain.
That's preposterous.
He actually wasn't that good in the rain for sprint qualifying. The nearly impervious Dutchman only managing fourth, but was still unable to be overcome in the sprint, blowing past Lewis Hamilton on lap 10 and winning the sprint by 13 seconds.
Wait.
Lewis Hamilton, there was a sighting. It was fleeting, but it did happen.
This is amazing. I haven't seen this in years. I'm gonna have to go tell my wife.
Ow. You can't see it. I'm recording on Riverside here as a behind the scenes note. RJ literally jumped off his chair and pretended to run for a second. Then we just pissed ourselves laughing.
Oh, it hurts to laugh. Unfortunately, in the remaining line laps of that sprint, Max pulled 13 seconds on aforementioned Lewis Hamilton. He then did the same thing in the Grand Prix over Lando Norris and Sergio Perez, as Max gets one of his more comfortable wins this year. In the 5 years since Grand Prix 1000, the 2019 edition of this race, Max Verstappen has won his 53rd Grand Prix. The rest of the field has also combined for 53 Grand Prix wins.
Which means to say that in the last 106 Formula One Grand Prix, you can flip a coin and you'll be as likely for a Max Verstappen win as an anybody else in the field win.
It's 50-50 at this point. It's a literal coin flip, but whether you're picking out a Max win in the last 5 years.
Okay, how do we possibly restate what we've already said? Well, I want to go to something that... I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going to Sky Sports resident boomer Karun Chandhok for something that completely...
Do you have any idea how shockingly little that narrows it down?
Here is an impressive stat that I heard today, April 22nd. This is Monday, the Monday before we record. On not a single lap of the entire Chinese Grand Prix, did Max Verstappen do a slower lap time than the drivers who finished second, third, or fourth?
Yeah, and I saw the telemetry there because a friend of the show, Blake, showed it to me. You might know him as Brake on the internet. Very good guy. Very, very good daily guy.
Lamborghini Iron Links engineer, Blake.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And he showed off the data because he does a great coffee page where he does analysis of telemetry. Well worth your money, I would say, if you can afford so. Please support him. He's a great guy. Karun wasn't joking. That actually happened. Every single lap, Max was faster than second place finisher Lando Norris, third place finisher Sergio Perez, and fourth place finisher Charles Leclerc. Every single lap.
In fact, the only notable laps where he wasn't the fastest car on track was Oscar Piastri's outlap after the first stint, Carlos Sainz's outlap after the first stint, and Fernando Alonso's fastest lap.
Yeah, which was a brand new set of mediums that he'd strapped on. Was Aston Martin had a very strange strategy to go for a late chase down with Alonso at the end of the race. Yeah, I mean,
I looked at that telemetry and I'm just shook, frankly. Because to watch it is one thing. To actually see it be borne out in the data is actually a little bit more terrifying. Also, what got me shook, a double stack from Red Bull where the two combined pit stops totaled 4.1 seconds.
The average of their four stops in that race was 2 seconds flat.
Kick Sauber as whiplash watching that video.
One of the last stop they had of the day was a 1.90. I think it's the third fastest pit stop of all time. I think I'm right in saying that's the greatest performance a pit crew has ever had in a Grand Prix. Absolutely sensational from the Red Bull pit crew. Ridiculous. Unreal. Like, it's...
Yeah, 2.1, a 2, a 2, and a 1.9.
And that was a
one. And one of those was a double stack.
One of those was two of those was in a double stack, and one of them was a 1.90. They rounded down. It's outrageous.
Kieran mentioned it. They desperately want that fastest ever stop title back from McLaren.
Oh yeah, my man Callum Nicholas. You might know him as the black guy with the dreads. He's one of their chief mechanics. He spoke about it on Sky Sports' own podcast. They tipped the hat to McLaren last year when they broke the record, but he made it abundantly clear he wanted that record back, and they are trying. God bless them, they are trying. But again, it's a testament and a salute to not just Max, and it's easy to talk about Max at this point. It's just Red Bull's overall operational excellence once again is just absolutely outstanding. Max won this race with one arm tied behind his back. We'll talk about this later in the week when we talk about IndyCar at Long Beach with a certain other veteran legend driver of that series, but it reminds me a little bit of, and I use this in the strongest possible praise in sense, it's like Lionel Messi at Barcelona, where Messi was scoring ridiculous goals every weekend. And it's, as Rob Hodgson would say, he makes the spectacular look routine. It's getting to the point where if Max gets a clear run off the line...
Clean run in the sprint. He started from fourth, got a position off the start as Lando tried to brave it around the outside of Lewis. Didn't work. And then for four or five laps, you see the Red Bulls kind of squirming around. It can't get tire temperatures. And it's like on the fourth or fifth lap, someone had depressed the plunger on a detonator.
Yeah.
Because that car came alive. He bolted after the front two, drove by them and never looked back.
13 seconds in 9 laps. It's just... When that Red Bull's at full song, I've never seen anything like it. Not since maybe Michael in the prime days of Ferrari. A car that was built for ultimate speed. A car that was built to break a 305-kilometer Grand Prix race down into four neatly piled 75-kilometer chunks where he would just run qualifying laps. Again and again and again, and just hammer you, death by a thousand cuts. That's what Max is doing right now. And he's doing it on a level unlike anybody I've ever seen in the 20 plus years I've been watching this sport. Like, Hamilton wasn't doing this every week. Schumacher wasn't doing this every week. And I need to remind you, and RJ, I'm sure, will back me up on this. Sergio Perez is a very, very good racing driver. He's an all-time solid driver. I had him in my top 10 drivers of the decade for the 2010s. He's been fantastic midfielder. He's got 5 career wins to his name. He'll probably have more by the time it's all said and done. He's a great driver, a great resume on any level.
And back on song this year.
Yeah, and he's had a
compared
good
to last
season.
Year. He's having a very good season.
He's been very solid in the Red Bull last year as well, right?
Yeah,
he's crushing.
He's being dismantled brick by brick.
It's and I like Checo, And Checo's doing a very solid job. But Checo, if nothing else, has proven that that Red Bull is beatable for all the dominance it can have in F1. Like, it is a beatable car. And look, Perez is a good driver with a good resume. It's not like they've put a back marker in that car. Perez is a damn good driver on any level. But he has shown that there is a degree of vulnerability against that Red Bull, even when you put a very good to great driver in it. Max in that car is on a completely different plane of existence. It's otherworldly.
I'm glad we're like coming around and realizing that, like, you know, if it's not all the car for Max Verstappen's success, it can't all be the driver for Sergio Perez's failure. And he is better this year. I'll give you that. But Max, we're running out of ways.
It's beyond, like, if he gets a clean weekend. Basically, if the car doesn't fail, he wins the race at this point. That was more or less the case last year, you know, outside of Singapore. And it's looking much the case this year.
53 out of the last 106, 20 out of the last 22. We've never seen anything like this.
Not the sustainability of it. And the fact that, you know, when you break down what the Red Bull's kind of its advantage, the curve of its advantage looks like, you saw it much borne out in the sprint that the ultimate lap time was only a tenth or two clear of the field. It's the fact that Max can reproduce that across an entire stint.
Again and again and again.
It's metronomic.
It's Jorge Lorenzo at his prime in MotoGP. It's just, you can just do the same lap time within a tenth, like again and again and again. And it's just that, it's that sustained pressure that you just can't keep up with. And again, we know Merckx's struggles in that sprint. We saw it. You know, we've seen them struggle for the last 2+ years now. This is still Lewis Hamilton. This is still the greatest F1 drive we've ever seen in our lifetimes. And he's getting crushed into a pillar of salt. I mean, it is incredible.
Like, what, I watched that sprint and I thought, as everybody was just like, oh, Matt's going to pull away, look at the humiliation. The guy's like, that's still second place, and he will happily take that sprint finish to the bank because it did not get better in the Grand Prix.
No, it did not. He does owe Fernando Alonso drinks.
He does.
On account of the widest Aston Martin in the history of the company.
The widest, and then the most pointy when he got to the end of Sector 2 and dive-bombed into the side of Carlos Sainz's car and got a 10-second time penalty for his trouble.
10-second time penalty and a puncture.
Puncture and good free job, penalty Mando. Points. That was crazy. I want to give a shout-out to a couple of dudes. Lando Norris, who like was going into this weekend saying that this was going to be a damage limitation job for McLaren. They had no confidence of the low-speed corners on this track at all. And they were not confident about this race. And yes, he got a little bit lucky because of the timing of the two safety cars that we got in the middle of this race, turning it into an effective one-stopper, essentially. Even so, Lando drove the nuts off that McLaren. Drive. Fantastic performance.
And all week, I mean, sprint pole, it went to shit at turn one, but still, sprint pole in horrendous conditions.
Yeah,
right on the cusp of what is really, you know, like
full wet.
I would actually say the opposite, like right in the center of changeable conditions where you're quite sure what tire to be on, where to run on the track. He set a fantastic lap. And McLaren had probably their best weekend since maybe Japan last year, Qatar last year.
Yeah.
Because, in the red corner. This was a down weekend for Ferrari. They just did not have pace on anything but the medium tire.
And yeah, I as producer in my full-time job at the Motorsport Network, I sat down with the Autosport guys as they were talking about previewing this race, and they were genuinely confident that Ferrari had a genuine shot this weekend with how the long flowing corners and the sweeping nature of Shanghai was actually going to favor them a little bit this weekend. And it just didn't come together. Ferrari was actually, if anything, as you alluded to, Cam, it might have been a a throwback to some of last year's problems where on hard the rubber, their pace just disappeared.
In their own words, Dre, they lost half a second of relative performance to everyone around them when they bolted on the hards. I tend to think, I don't know, it is a much better car than last year's car. Last year's car was a mess for three quarters of the season.
Absolutely.
But we've seen it kind of on a consistent trend with Ferrari over the last few years or so, that as you step up to harder and harder compounds, that lack of mechanical grip begins to unmask certain issues with their mechanical platform.
Mm.
And they just couldn't get the performance to the road the way that McLaren could for pretty much all of the weekend. And then Red Bull could once they got their tires going. Initially looked a little bit like tire warm-up issues, like what Red Bull had early in the weekend in the wet and in the cold. But in race trim, they just couldn't get any pace out of anything but the medium tire.
True. I still think Charles Leclerc had a brilliant drive to get to P4. Like, I think Leclerc was outstanding. Again, like, he's been so consistently brilliant this season. Again, maybe not quite in qualifying. He's been a bit closer to Carlos this year. I think he's lost a little bit of his ace in the hole. I think that Ferrari's got a little bit of problem generating heat into their tyres for qualifying runs. But in race trim, Charles has been flawless pretty much all year long. Really, really consistently excellent. And you know, that was the first time Sainz properly has been beaten by his teammate pretty much all season. Maybe Bahrain you could throw in there given the mess with the braking situation. But overall, I think that was a pretty comprehensive schlacking by Charles on that one. But very good drives from the top four in general on this one. George, I think, did a pretty solid job in P6 as well for Mercedes.
Yeah, because Mercedes, you know, across the top five cars, the Mercedes is the worst car in high speed consistently. Mm. And there are a couple corners where that is just going to kill you around here. The long flowing corners where you need the confidence in the back end of the car. The Mercedes just didn't work in the dry relative to the cars in front of them. And I mean, otherwise, I mean, Ferrari basically got, I think, all they could get with, you know, what happened with Piastri, where his car ended up damaged. He was pretty much a non-factor with half a diffuser for most of the race.
Should we talk about how he got that damage?
Unfortunately, as with most things on the internet, rule 34 applies everywhere.
Tell us more, Roger.
Yeah, this race had a nasty incident on a safety car restart. Fernando Alonso locked up going into the final hairpin just as they're about to take the green, and the concertina effect caused a lazy Lance Stroll to crash into the back of Daniel Ricciardo, ending his day and getting him a 10-second time penalty and 2 penalty points. Daniel Ricciardo, by the way, was also given 2 penalty points for overtaking under safety car, trying to retake his position after the crash that was not his fault. And on an entire day where everything just went to shambles for Team Faenza Racing Bulls, Visa Cash App, Team Faenza, we got to talk about Lance. Go on with it. How bad is it? Is there like any cope at all that like Aston will just move him somewhere else in the company?
Nope. Also, on a side note, before I really get into this as well, we didn't even really mention the fact that Tsunoda was taken out by Kevin Magnussen in the first lap after green on that restart. Just hooked him on the starter sector too, spun him out. Tsunoda broke his suspension as a
wasted
result.
Wasted weekend at Team Faenza, and it's not even their fault.
First weekend for Daniel on a new chassis as well. And he was genuinely looking solid out there on that new chassis, and it was all for naught. And if anything, it's actually quite ironic that he's probably been given a harsher punishment because he's now been given a three-place grid penalty for Miami because Ricciardo did not finish the race. That penalty was going to be 10 seconds, but it's now been turned into a three-place grid penalty for Miami next weekend for it passing Hülkenberg on the safety car. So he's actually been arguably punished worse for what happened to him passing under a safety car than Stroll got for wrecking under a safety car.
Now, generally speaking, in a lot of the Japanese championships that to the side, They have like a subsection, like Super GT has this whole points penalty thing called the Driving Moral Hazard Infraction System, and it gives you out a list of like penalties that you can rack up over the course of the year and how many points they're worth. And generally speaking, losing control of your car is one of those that can get you penalty points. So is avoidable contact. And if you combine the two together, I'd say that's pretty bad.
The thing is, right, I don't normally play too much into the driver-led interviews because they're normally heat-of-the-moment stuff, mm-hmm. right? But
that was our, that's why we love him.
But Stroll called Ricciardo an idiot and blamed him in the moment it happened. Even though we had the onboard footage, Stroll is looking at the apex of the corner. He's not looking at what's going on directly in front of him as he drives into the back of Ricciardo's car. And when Ricciardo found out that Stroll called him an idiot on the radio, Daniel Ricciardo said, and I quote, "Fuck that guy."
To sound like an Alonso homer, right? But the number of people that were wanting to put, well, where's Alonso's penalty for stacking up the field? Everybody else behind him stopped except for one guy.
That's literally what Oscar Piastri said. It's like, listen, everybody locked up, everybody stacked up, but we didn't hit anybody else. Piastri, who was the other victim in all of this. Let's put it to you this way. I've seen Daniel in Formula One for nearly 15 years now. He was angrier when he was told that Stroll called him an idiot, more so than when he was screwed out of that Monaco win in 2017.
Are you sure that he's not as angry as that one time where he yelled fuck at the top of his lungs after Mexico City qualifying?
Okay, maybe that one.
Okay. We're at least creating a top. We're creating a podium here.
It's in the top three. No, look. It's all, that's the worst part of all this. It almost feels futile talking about Lance in this manner now because we all know there's going to be no greater repercussion from this. We all know he has the safest seat in F1. And, like, it's infuriating because I want to root for Aston Martin and I want them to do well. And I think they're a great team with a fantastic lead driver who's done a fantastic job of carrying them for the last year and change. If Aston Martin wants to be a serious team, they have to move on from this guy. But it's not going to happen. And we know it's not going to happen because Lawrence is prepared to spend whatever it takes to give Lance this incredible career. To give him an F1 seat, to give him an F1 team that's essentially his in all but name, to placate the fact that his son doesn't have the talent to drive at this level. This is year 8 of Lance Stroll in Formula 1. Year 8. This is completely inexcusable driving standards from him at this point. I'd expect that if it was a rookie, if that was Logan Sargeant, we would have completely peppered him for it, and deservedly so. This is year 8 veteran of 150 starts, Lance Stroll. 150. Do you know how few drivers get 150 starts in F1?
Oh, it's not many. It was
it's rarefied air.
It's less than there was when I was growing up in my time, back before we had 20-some-odd race seasons.
Yeah, it's...
And the frustrating thing about all of this, and we've said it many, many times before, there is always a flash. Something gives you hope that Lance is going to turn it around, and it just never sustains. And that's the problem. It'd be easier if he was just completely untalented. But now when he gives you like that little glimmer of hope, every half dozen or so, or dozen so Grand Prix, it makes you think, this is the guy that was tearing it up in junior Formula. This is the guy that was able to make his Formula One debut as a teenager, an opportunity that few other drivers get. And yet, it just never sustains.
Cam, I know you've been stoking the fires over there of brimstone in your corner. What have you got to say on this?
Nothing. Like, what is there for me to add about this? Lance Stroll is not serious, but you knew that already.
The only way this doesn't,
guys,
this ends...
He was looking at the corner, ignoring the fact that he had a whole-ass Formula One car stopped in front of him. You can't teach that. That's common sense. We have annihilated rookie drivers for less than that.
Mm-hmm. I actually find it amazing, especially given the stewards have tightened up the rule book on avoidable contact and incidents involving racecraft this year, and Stroll only got 10 seconds for it. He got less penalty points in his license for causing a collision under a safety car than Fernando Alonso did for dive-bombing Carlos Sainz during the sprint. Alonso got 3 penalty points for that dive. Stroll only got 2 for this one.
I mean, geez, at least Alonso was on an active racetrack.
How was that not at least a drive-through penalty?
You've
wrecked under yellow!
Wrecked under yellow. He destroyed Daniel Ricciardo's car. He destroyed the back of Piastri's car and effectively ruined any chance of him going up the field. And then he had the gall to blame the other guy when he rear-ended somebody.
That's just...
While not looking ahead of himself.
It's the lack of accountability. It's the total apathy to the job that he puts in. And like, I know he's not apathetic to the point that he'll just like, if he picks up a wrist injury, he'll be done with it. Like, that's the other thing too. He cares enough to race through the pain, but he doesn't really care enough to improve after that is what it seems like. And I almost think the only way that this ends is if he gives it up of his own volition because he's bored and doesn't give a shit anymore.
And you know, I don't think it's that. I think he does genuinely care. I think that's one of those internet myths that because Stroll doesn't like media interviews, and he's not the first athlete and he won't be the last that doesn't like media or anything. Hi, Kimmy. You know, hi, any basketball player you can think of.
But Kimmy Raikkonen backed it up with wins and championships. That's the difference.
Oh, yeah, like, we knew he was an arsehole, ironically, so we liked him for it. That was the difference. The point I'm getting at here is that, like, Lance does care. Like, he wouldn't have tried to scramble back to driving Bahrain last year if he didn't give a shit. He could have easily just taken a month off right there and then, and no one would have blamed him for it, given the nastiness and the severity of the injuries he had. He does care. I'm not going to be the person to say that Lance Stroll doesn't give a shit. I would argue the problem is he might be the worst driver in Formula One pound for pound relative to his equipment.
Remove the might. There's no one doing less with more. Because you know what? Lance Stroll has a great car. Logan Sargeant is in a shitbox that has been biting him and Alex Albon all year. This year's Williams is not good.
Yeah, it's still scoreless after 5 rounds. Like, it's not good. No, it's not
in any context of any motorsport in year 8, having incidents like that is not good enough.
It's just annoying because it's just so futile. Like, I feel like I've wasted energy even talking about it.
We can scream our heads off for another hour on this subject alone. Nothing's going to happen.
Why can we just, let's talk about Zhou Guanyu.
Let's do that.
Because he finally got to race at home. He finished 13th.
That was lovely.
His pit stops didn't go entirely terrible. He got a special grid slot in the home straight after the race. Yao Ming said of him, he could beat at F1 in China what I was to basketball, but he's in a contract year. Things are very dicey at Team Hinweil. Was this enough to save his F1 career? I got thoughts about it.
You probably wouldn't call this enough to save an F1 career. And that's not necessarily on him.
No. I wrote about this on the website. And I called the section A Moment of Empathy. And there's a reason why I called that section that. I feel bad for Joe. I really do. Because you know what? I could be reading too much into this, because when he got out of that special grid slot, he got on the end of the start-finish straight at the end of the race. Yeah, the special Zhou-mounted plinth. He took his helmet off, acknowledged the roaring crowd. There was a Zhou grandstand just for him this weekend. He burst into tears. I've never seen him so emotional in the... This is year 4 for him in F1. I've never seen him like that before in F1. I feel bad... I feel bad for him, in a sense, because I saw, I've put that in the script because I heard Yao Ming mention it on Ted's Notebook, where Ted Kravitz talked about that same quote, because Yao Ming was there as a guest of Aston Martin's. If you don't know Yao Ming, 7'6", transcendent player for basketball awareness in China, drafted by the Houston Rockets, was a great NBA player, multiple time All-Star, very, very talented and gifted.
Would have had even greater career had he not been just hampered by chronic injuries that are just the consequence of playing in such a large body.
Yeah.
Yep.
You 7'6", 300-pound body, and just there is injuries that come with being tall. There's unfortunate that there is a good reason why people that are that tall tend to live shorter lives. It's just the human body's not designed to be that big. Yao was a fantastic player, but more than that, he was one of the real key bridge figures for increasing basketball's popularity in China. He was huge for the game in China. Him and Stephon Marbury were legends in making Chinese people love and care about basketball. Yao was the big... So when Yao is coming out and saying Zhou can be for F1 what I was for basketball, I actually feel kind of nervous for Zhou, because that's such a hard task to follow up for. And Zhou is... Would it be fair to say there's a more than 50% chance Zhou loses his seat by the end of the year?
I think it's not an unfair assessment, because it is his third year. And the thing we've always been asking for after year two is just like, when is he going to take this next step? Because yes, he's against a multi-time Formula One race winner, Valtteri Bottas, in the same seat. But you'd like to think Zhou is capable of showing those flashes where he can match and exceed that pace. Right now, his head-to-head qualifying record is a perfect 4-0 against him, and in favor of Valtteri Bottas, which is not a good start. And on top of the fact that this team's not scoring any points, well, there's two reasons for that. One, the car is not that quick. And the other is the fact that they have made a strange long-term strategy of engineering pit stops to be shorter in the long run by making them painfully long in the short run. So neither of that is helping, but it almost just feels like, I don't want this to be his only home race.
It feels inevitable, given that it seems like the car lost signs to what will be Audi, as could be as soon as next year. Seems inevitable.
Ultimately, this team's will is not its own. Everything over these next couple of years is preparing to become Audi's factory team. That with Audi taking effectively, full controlling ownership.
Yeah, they've bought the whole thing now. Now we know.
Yeah, and they're going to bring in drivers who they think can lead a factory program. And on current evidence, I feel not just in the driver's seat, but there's going to be major turnover in the next 2 or 3 years across all of Sauber. Because
absolutely,
the pit stops are embarrassing on this level. And the car has been... no good really since they lost their weight advantage after a couple races in 2022.
They're not terrible at the moment, but they're not what they were 2 years ago.
Were last year, Dre. And who were they last year?
Ninth overall on the standings.
What did we give them an award for something?
We gave them an award, not one that you want to win. The award for just being there. And it feels like, again, they are just there. They're not terrible. Like, I'm gonna rip the bandage off. I think Williams have been this year relative to their last couple of years, but they just exist.
And I don't know, man. The new name of the team really did kind of tilt things.
give it a little kick. But no, it's The prevailing rumors have been for quite some time that a Sainz Hulkenberg lineup looks quite likely.
That's the hottest lineup of 2018, man.
It really is. I mean, look, everyone, Carlos Sainz is the best driver on the board when it comes to free agency.
Absolutely.
Right now. If you can go get Carlos Sainz, you go get Carlos Sainz.
Absolutely. And Nico Hulkenberg is just like defying the limits of age and time itself and seems to be...
Hulkenberg's been excellent all season.
Carlos has to hope that Hulkenberg doesn't reenact 2018, because he almost ended the man's career.
Yeah, and like the rumors are probably going to carry in the chat, they might get the Hulk deal done at Miami next weekend. Hulk is keen for a move, and apparently Audi wants him.
Yeah, you know, he does not want to retire at Haas.
Andreas Seidel reunion from his Porsche Le Mans winning days as well. There's a lot of people in that camp that are very high on Hulkenberg. You know, well, he was excellent for 2013 as well. And you look at this
objectively, a Carlos Sainz Jr. Nico Hulkenberg lineup is one of the best lineups on the grid, really. Strong. Up until you get to your Ferrari lineup for next year.
Ferrari, McLaren, Red Bull, that kind of it's half a step behind them. It's in that ballpark.
It's in the ballpark. And that's for the start of a factory program. That's all you really need it to be for now. And Joe has not been bad. If anything, this year, race trim, he's had a couple really solid drives.
Yeah.
But it's hard to see where he fits into those plans.
No,
he needs to be taking this team by the scruff of the neck now and saying to the team bosses, I'm going to make you regret dropping me. And he's not doing that right now. Valtteri Bottas is at worst on his level, and I'd argue still slightly better as an overall driver right now.
And we spent years raking Bottas over the coals for...
No, we didn't. We gave him a 10 out of 10. You remember that one time?
Who is this we?
We.
Who is this we you speak of?
We is a Motorsport 101 collective. The person that gave him the 10 out of 10 is not here to speak for himself at this present time, but it is on the record.
But we raked him over the coals for years for having a Mercedes, having the best car in F1, and getting blown into the weeds, not just by Lewis, but often by the other cars up there. I mean, he went winless one year at Mercedes. So if he's exiting his prime and Joe should be coming into his prime and Joe is doing no better, if anything slightly worse, it's really hard to see how he has a future here.
He's in that spot where Antonio Giovinazzi was before he got pushed out of Formula One. And the thing with Joe is that he's never been evaluated like a normal... Put it to you this way. I don't know of a lot of like British drivers that are constantly being evaluated in terms of like, you know, his commercial value to his home country. That always seems to be what is attached to every narrative about Joe Guan Yu's career. It's just like...
It's dog whistle talk.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Call it what it is. It's dog whistle talk.
You ripped the band-aid off, pal. Like, I'm just the one screaming in pain.
Because it's one of the few privileges I have here, given the color of my skin. I could call a dog whistle when I see one, because that's what it was when he got the job. And that was unfortunate. And it's a stigma that's never gone away from Joe. It's that you're just here to have a big old collective... community handshake deal with China, because Joe does have a bit of commercial clout about him, because he does have some great fashion partners. He's a Christian Dior partnership athlete, and he's a genuine fashionista with great ties in that industry. And a lot of these car companies that are associated with Formula One or have an F1 team want to try and break China as an overall market. It's a big booming market. They want to sell cars out there. So they associate all of that and wrap that up with Zhou, a guy who spent most of his childhood and racing career in Sheffield.
The guy's basically British.
Like, this is the... hey, Britain, and this is coming from the one British host on this show, this is the one guy you might be able to actually claim. Because you tried to claim Alex Albon, and Albon was like, no, I've got a Thai license. Even though he was born and raised in London. Joe is a hell of a lot nearer to that whole, you know, he's British because, you know, he does well and shit. I'm trying to claim him. And I love that Kieran in our chat said, Sky Sports tried claiming him at the Chinese Grand Prix. I'm just saying, because he moved to Sheffield when he was 13 years of age. You know, he knew that he didn't have the opportunity to progress his career in China. He had to come to Yorkshire.
Yeah, and it's like that for a lot of drivers who come from places where there aren't really strong motorsports foundations. You think Emerson Fittipaldi became Emerson Fittipaldi because he cut his teeth in Brazil?
Yeah. It's the way it goes. You know, the man likes gravy on his chips as much as I do. And yet, you know,
gravy.
Yeah, but you can't forget the gravy. But yeah, it's that Chinese tie. It's just lazy. At best, it's lazy. At worst, it's a dog whistle. And it's never sat comfortably with me on this one. And unfortunately, he's like, again, the way I see it right now, he will be the fall guy for the reboot of Audi, by the looks of it. At least him, maybe Bottas too, given the way it's going. I think there's a better chance that Bottas stays in because he's the better driver, and if they don't get Hülkenberg, he's still a solid veteran to have in that camp no matter what. But it's looking like it's going to be Sainz and Hülkenberg at that team next year, and Joe will be the fall guy. And it'll be a damn shame if a guy that had to wait 20 years, because you know, there's great pictures of him as a child in those stands when the Chinese Grand Prix first hit the calendar in 2004, 20 years ago. There was a great interview where he sat down with Will Buxton, and Will, in one of his genuinely good interview moments, said to Zhou, "What would you tell your child version of yourself now that you've actually made it to Formula One?" And he said, "Don't give up. Don't give up the dream," because he made it. And that is something that is so unbelievably against the odds. Something we forget in Formula One, the odds of the average person ever making it on this grid, the 20 most lucrative seats in motorsport, is fractions of a percent.
The powers that be in this sport are trying to ensure that it is never more than 20, and maybe fewer going forward.
Mm-hmm. He made it. And he told his younger self to never give up. He had to wait 20 years for this moment of driving a home Grand Prix. And he acted and came off as a person that was just so glad he finally got to experience that dream. It would be a damn shame if he didn't get a second one. But that's sport for you sometimes, unfortunately.
One of the better drivers that I've had the chance to like actually put a microphone in front of and talk with at media scrums.
He's like a lovely guy.
When no other person was interested, I was always a person that's like, I'll make time for Joe Guanyu.
He seems like a genuinely lovely young man. He really does. Like, I've never had a bad word to say about Joe as a person. And I know that normally is cliched for he's not a very good driver, but I don't care on any level. Just be a good human being and you're always going to do well with me. He seems like a genuinely lovely guy. He really does. And it would be a damn shame if F1 lost him, but not for the reasons that people want to make out. And that's the problem I have with it in that sense.
One more thing before we leave. Did you hear about the new points proposal? Yeah. Top 7 would stay the same under the new Formula One proposed point system, but 8th place would get 5 points, 9th place would get 4, 10th place would get 3, 11th place would get 2, and 12th place would get 1, which means we'd have top 12 score points.
This is and for what it's worth, it's looking like this will go through. There's going to be an F1 commission meeting in May. Apparently the teams are all for it. They want points to go down to 12. I'll be real. I don't have a huge problem with this. I think it's fine. I think it's fine. If anything, given... Okay. A part of me does feel like this is trying to put a plaster on a gunshot wound. The whole... Because we know there's a power five in F1 right now. The five best teams in F1 are taking 90% of the points. You'll have a good chance of getting a point if you can beat Lance Stroll. That's the way Formula One is right now. And that's not ideal. And I don't think Europe quite wants to go down that whole American road of everybody gets points for just being here. But I actually quite like it because it would take out those kind of freak days that lower-end teams sometimes get that can define their whole season.
Propping up your entire season like because you win on countback.
Right. I've never been the big fan of the freak outlier that can get a team 10, 11, 12 million quid in prize money extra off of one freak race in a 20-plus race season. I actually think this rewards consistency a little bit better as a result of this. And with that in mind, especially given how reliable Formula One cars are nowadays, where the mechanical failure just doesn't happen as often these days.
You're not going to hear me stand up against a idea that turns it into more of a meritocracy. And ultimately, it will matter more if you can get past that guy who's holding up your DRS train. it is going to matter more if you can throw a haymaker of a strategy and snag that one extra position. And I think that is an objective good thing. It doesn't give you points all the way down, you know, and neither does MotoGP. MotoGP goes down to what, 15? Yeah.
15.
It does, 15, yeah. 25, 20, 16, yeah. 13, 11, more, and then minus one more down entries, to
15. So staggered out, that makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, I have no issue with it whatsoever. I think it turns that fight in that midfield into a little bit more of a meritocracy across a season. And I think that's a good thing.
Because, let's be real, cars are, relatively speaking, more bulletproof than they ever were back when we were only paying out top 6 points, and especially when we had drop scores.
They were there sports for a reason. Yeah. It's a different sport. I actually think it's a better scoring system. A lot of people got very precious about this, Martin Brundle being one of them, a guy who just cannot tolerate any idea of change. And I like Martin, but come on, man. But like, for me personally, I'm fine with it. I think rewarding consistency is good. I know you've got to draw the line somewhere as a cutoff. 12th is fine, given the state of the field right now. You could even go to 15, and I'd have no problem with that either. You know, it keeps the 7-point gap where you're rewarding people who win more, because that was my biggest problem with the old systems. Like when it was 10-6 and 10-8 at one point. Like, you got 2 points more for a win over second place. It was just
They custom built that system to stop Michael Schumacher. So then Schumacher rolls up with, you know, winning by France.
It's a different sport now, and I think you're absolutely right to say that. Hell, I wouldn't even mind if you. I mean, the only people that seem to be mad about it is stat geeks. And I'm like, guys, you don't really care about point records,
there's another aspect
to
this as well that we talked about a little bit in our Discord when this news kind of first came out, that at the end of the day, points are arbitrary.
And also, points also mean that for every point you earn, you also have to pay the FIA a little bit of something. Some people were out there saying, oh, is this FOM and FIA's way of raising a get-rich-quick scheme?
Oh no! A couple of smaller end teams might get 10 more points, so they got to give the FIA like an extra maybe 50 grand or something. Oh no! Please, they rake that up in fines every year. It's one extra bottle of Dom Perignon at the end of season gala. Come on now, please. Come on.
Yeah.
Be serious.
points are worth what we say they're worth, and that's basically it. I could tell you that second place gets more points than first. At the end of the day, it's just what the FIA defines.
God. Have you been watching the World Rally Championship lately?
We do not have time for this. According to this timeline, neither does the WRC at this rate.
Exactly. We'll be back for Formula One in a couple of weeks' time from Miami for the Miami Grand Prix, the first of 3 trips to America. Good news, it's another sprint weekend as well, and I know how much the F1 community loves them. So enjoy that. Miami and its terrible roads with only one practice session. Who knows what might happen? Maybe Lewis Hamilton will qualify second again. Who knows?
Just want a free iced coffee in the catering center.
Who doesn't want a free iced coffee in the catering center? It's a good time. We've got a completely normal podcast coming up next. You'll see. But also check out early next week as well for our IndyCar podcast on Long Beach. And yeah, death, taxes, Scott Dixon.
Scott Dixon and the punished Penske.
Oh boy. More on that next time. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connor and Cameron Buckley. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. Sayonara.
I really like ice cream, but I also love Fast and Furious.
Where
Nine.
Is the correlation here?
If you know, you know. Have you not seen the John Cena ice cream Bing Chi Ling vine?
No.
That's what he's talking about. He's talking about promoting Fast and Furious 9 and how much he likes ice cream.
It's going to be interesting to see how much of that actually makes the final edit.